Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Well, good evening, everyone, here from Europe, and welcome to our work today with this vast science, the science of triangles. There are so many triangles possible, as DK tells us, he can only manage to deliver to us a few, because otherwise it would be an overwhelming prospect. And there are those that are more important to us than others. So I just want to welcome you, and then we'll do the great invocation together and get into the reading and the commentary. So hi, Anne and Annette and Ariel and Britta and Catherine, David, Eva, Frederick, Georgina, Helen and Helene and Ishtar, and I think there must be at least two Joes. maybe it's something different, J-O, hi, and Jan and Joan. And Yohi, or Johi, Karen and Carrie, Kim, Leslie, Margot, Mariana, Mariut, Martha, Nessa, Nienke, Norman, Regina, and Risto, and Zenaide, and Zipporah. And over here, helping us on the staff side, BL, Joe, Michael Stacy, Tuya, and myself. So let's begin with the great invocation. Just keep yourself on mute for that. And just go along with me, either out loud where you are at home or wherever you are, and then, or internally, however you want to do that. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Om. Well, you know, in the work of the externalization, especially the last part of the book, where he's dealing with the decade of 1940 to approximately 1950, he tells us that the most important thing that we can do is to prepare men's minds and hearts for the reappearance of the world teacher, Lord Maitreya, in the West called the Christ and by other names. And that the most important part of that work is to distribute as widely as possible the great invocation, which Lucis Trust has done a great job with that, and that distribution is not over. So we have to continue with it for sure. So welcome the people that have just come. And now, by the way, calling your attention to the fact that in the chat box, we have the Zoom links for the next two evening meetings. The morning meetings are our usual ask this week. Reappearance of the Christ tomorrow morning, at least for us in Europe. And the glamour work on Friday. And maybe, I don't know if we have the link for that. That would be good. That's not a broadcast. That is a webinar. So Michael, if you'd be so kind to put in the glamour work there, or the link for it. And then we have begun, Tui and I, this esoteric United Nations work. And it's a serious business, and the people who participate in that make a pledge or a commitment to really continue for the next 5 years. So it's a serious prospect. And we'll be offering the opportunity for those who may be interested to try to help evoke through invocation, but to evoke the souls of nations and thereby assist these nations in expressing their highest capabilities. So we actually are having a meeting there, but that is for those who are already members. And that's on Sunday at 1 o'clock p.m. GMT, quite early for some and late for others, but it's the best we can do. And then we'll have a get together where you'll have the opportunity, if you have not joined yet, to consider it and make your pledge to work and continue with the project. And we'll be doing the Souls of Nations on Saturday, and that'll be a morning broadcast. We worked on Yemen, a very afflicted nation, last Saturday. So lots to consider, and in our esoteric work, we'll do the best we can to assist. Okay. Now, the work that we're doing now is from esoteric astrology. And there's about 100 pages there that deal with the science of triangles. So, you end up learning a bit about the deeper aspects of astrology along with the science of triangles. The two are inevitable. Astrology is principally ruled by the third ray, whereas the study of the seven rays is a great second ray study. It's good to have those things in mind, and they were considered respectively the third most important teaching that DK gave on the rays and the fourth most on esoteric astrology. And when we finish this section, there are so many different references to different triangles and what they bring in to the planetary energy system. So we'll be working on those, but it'll still be yet a little while before we're ready to do that. So take notes as you go and think of things that may be of interest to you, and then we'll, have a little break from the reading, and we will take your questions and your statements, and you can either write them or speak them. So we're on program 67, Science of Triangles. And we'll just read and think together. So DK says, I could fill many volumes with the indications of the various triangles. We know he could, as they are discovered to be related in time and space. Which is interesting because, of course, when you look at the starry heavens, you're not receiving light, which started at the same time. It's no true picture. One area may be so many thousands of light years away, and you're receiving that light, and another area may be just a few light years away, or even much, much more. So it's an illusion, in a sense, what you are seeing. It is not occurring at the same time. The light you are receiving is no true representation of the distribution of those sources in particular positions as they are at the moment. So it's a staggered kind of picture. And actually, the philosopher Giordano Bruno, he even long ago, 400 years ago, and a bit more, he imagined that that was the case. His ideas were too far ahead of his time, and he paid the price. So, under the will of deity and the unalterable energy at the heart of the manifested zodiac, and what is that? That unalterable energy is the energy of the one about whom naught may be said. And if I can just kind of shoot over here to this is a chart that Tuya prepared for us from DK's material. This little green triangle here is at the heart of the manifested zodiac. It is the central energy with the zodiac consisting of the heart in the head center of that great being. And then there are other centers within a zodiac of 10, and some of them, interestingly, are represented by these triangles. Well, going through this particular chart is it's quite a process, so sometime we'll do that. But we are within the range of that great supercosmic logos that we call the one about whom naught may be said. And that is really the main conditioning energy that we are dealing with in our local supercosmic system. There are cosmic logoi, and we're part of that, and then there are supercosmic logoi, and they control the whole zodiac and such great constellations as Orion and the Big Bear and the Little Bear and the central part of the Pleiades and the dragon, different great constellations are the chakras in this great unalterable energy at the heart of the manifested zodiac. Admittedly, this is a very big picture, but then the whole science of triangles comes from something that is way beyond our comprehension, and eventually it makes its way down into usability. The kind of meditation that Tuya gave this morning, at least morning in Europe, is the usable part, the practical part. And the rest here is broad scale speculation. So under the will of deity, which deity? There are a number of them. And maybe we have to consider this deity not just as the planetary deity, nor the solar systemic deity, but something greater still, a cosmic or supercosmic deity. And the unalterable energy at the heart of the manifested zodiac, they produce the changes in consciousness which make man divine at the close of the world cycle. Now, man, as we know man, or there are many types of men in other planetary schemes, but we are familiar with the idea of man in the Earth scheme. And that divinity goes through two types of rounds. One type of round goes through the globes of a planetary chain. And the larger type of round, at the end of which man will truly be divine, goes through the chains of a planetary scheme. Now, I wonder if that is comprehensible. Here, one type of round circles through the chain, and this is our chain, seven times, usually, unless like Venus, it's far ahead. And then the other type of round goes through all the chains in a planetary scheme. And Venus has completed her work in five such revolutions. Now, we don't know the details of those revolutions, but they certainly are more complex and interesting than what was originally given out in Theosophy. There it seems almost so mechanical and sequentially mechanical. But as we know from studying triangles, different triangles come into existence in our own energy system at different times. And so chakras are activated differently depending upon your highest ray. And therefore, a strict sequence of now it's this, now it's that may not apply at all. All of those planetary chains may be there simultaneously, but in different states of development and activation. And just the way we activate different triangles within our energy system, so within the planet, there are different types of activation of chains, and within the solar system, it's not just one after another in that rather, pedestrian sequence, but certain of the planetary schemes form triangles and activate sooner. Those below the diaphragm, for instance, are coming into organization before those above the diaphragm, and so it is in the triangles which exist for the human being in their energy system. Anyway, we will become divine. And what does that mean? Simply, finally, that our monad, will express itself fully on all planes. The monad is related to the vehicles on all the lower planes, but it's not expressing itself fully. It's what we call occultly inactive, something like that, because first the soul has to express. Putting in here that the triangle is a figure of balance and it is related to Libra. It's related to the fifth creative hierarchy. So when you look at what are the creative hierarchies connected with the triangle, it's particularly this third or eighth creative hierarchy. If you start from the astral plane, you reach eight. And if you start from the cosmic physical plane, counting downward, you reach three. And these are called the triple flowers, and basically they provide the triadal vehicles of a human being. If you really look at how a human being is put together, there are a lot of triangles. And Libra and Saturn are the main energies here, and the color is green. And the force of the mind, called Jnana Shakti, is the kind of energy that is found here. Now, you know, there are different kinds of yoga, and we've pretty well passed the Bhakti Yoga, but we have not necessarily passed the Jnana Yoga, which is the yoga of the mind, and then there are higher forms of yoga, Raja Yoga and Agni Yoga, which there's a triangle right there. The Agni Yoga, the Raja Yoga, and the Jnana Yoga are the three highest yogas of which we are aware. So what we call our triangle, the spiritual triad, and that's the one we're trying to contact, has a lot to do with the atmic plane and the name of these lives. I suppose they're Devic lives. Are the name is the triple flowers, and they're called lesser builders. Well, there's so much to study here, and DK is an expert in these matters of zodiacal, planetary, and creative hierarchy relationships. But the green is the third ray color, and we're dealing with a third ray science, principally in the science of triangles. So we're on our way to becoming divine, and basically divinity, rather than spirituality, divinity concerns the monadic plane and the logoic plane. And everything below that is Brahmic, and may have to do with spirituality, especially the spiritual triad, but divinity is something higher yet and represents the end of the cycle. So that's why I brought up this idea of the balance in Libra. The triangle is going to create the balanced energy response that we need in order to be effective in service and receptive of high subtle energies. The three aspects of divinity must be balanced within us. And one way of looking at that is Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity, or let's just say head, heart, and throat. But it says the Tibetan, he gives us a little taste there, you know, but he says the theme is too vast. We can imagine. That's the trouble when you really begin to have the intuition pouring in. It's you have to be extremely discriminated because you're starting on the path of omniscience, and one can just be confronted with virtually everything within a particular wholeness, and you can't handle it. It's just too much, given our limitations and even his limitations. But the theme is too vast, and all I seek to do is to point the way towards a new science and towards those, and this is an important idea, esoteric combinations of energies, which will, when recognized, enable humanity to make more rapid progress, because we'll be able to invoke specifically according to our need, and the evocation fulfilling that need will come. So when we recognize these combinations, we can address ourselves mostly in group form to the downflow of them. And it will enable humanity to make more rapid progress. I mean, we're already doing that, you know. The Great Invocation has many levels on which you can interpret it. There's the microcosmic level of our own energy system, and there's the planetary level that, let's say, or maybe the soul level and monadic level and triadal level. They are all triangles. Then the planetary levels, the center of light and love and power. And then we can go beyond to the solar systemic level in terms of certain planets, and then in terms of certain stars, and in certain systems of stars and systems of constellations. This great invocation, although practically considered, deals with a fundamental microcosmic triangle, can really be extended. And, you know, someday we have to talk about the possible extensions. For instance, when you're dealing with the Great Bear and the Little Bear and the central Pleiades, the jewel box of seven, you're also dealing with a very high cosmic level of the great invocation, ruled by a triangle. And then, of course, the receiving mechanism is man, or whatever counts for number four, and finds itself in the place of the mother aspect. Anyway, it's too vast, and he wants to point to combinations. Now, I want to say something about combinations. One of the things you develop as you become an esoteric astrologer, or maybe even an ordinary astrologer or a rheologist, is the power to combine energies and see how they aspect each other. For instance, an example, Aries, Leo, and Capricorn are all independent energies. But when you combine them, they make the three means of transmission of the first ray, and they all affect each other in different ways rather than just expressing their own nature, because they are in combination. So the power to combine and to see how one energy affects another is very, very important. And we can take that right into our own energy system and see what the combination may give us. We may look at the solar plexus, heart, and Ajna center. We may look at head, heart, and throat. There are all kinds of triangles which, when we study them in combination, mean more than to study any one aspect of the triangle. So more rapid progress will come. And also the fusing and blending of the energies of the three planetary centers, Shambhala, Hierarchy, and Humanity, and will transform our Earth. And note this, through the agency of human thought reacting to zodiacal influences, into a sacred planet. And of course, we have many triangular zodiacal influences, but it's how you think about it and how you can use the energies you receive to elevate humanity more rapidly. The big question is not what will happen to me, but how can I use the energy of a given triangle to equilibrize my system and make more rapid progress and help with the progress of humanity. So that by the study of esoteric astrology and this section about triangles, and through our thought, conditioned by what we learn, we are uniting, which is a big objective, uniting the three planetary centers and thereby helping to transform our planet into a sacred planet. When will that happen? I think it's happening around the time of the Judgment Day, which is still very far ahead. The Judgment Day is probably a kind of fifth initiation of a lesser kind in relation to our planet. And it's probably, in a way, a second cosmic initiation. There is also eventually, in relation to our planet, a fifth cosmic initiation. And that will be an initiation of the whole planetary scheme. And when that happens, we will be in a position to assist, we the Earth, assist the solar logos in taking its fifth initiation, because we are the base of the spine center, and you need that center to take the fifth initiation. So, you know, the law of analogy and correspondences we have to study carefully, and then we will learn what our place is on this planet in relation to the solar system and in relation to our sun. So DK goes on here, it is therefore the influence and combination of energies as they affect aspirants and disciples of the world which must suffice for any increased understanding. I mean, he gives us the larger structure, but he's just naming it for us in a way, and we can work with the law of analogy, but still, to be practical, we have to remember that we are aspirants, disciples, and probationary initiates for the most part, and we have to work on the level at which we find ourselves. So in our individual life and our group life, we can look at the combinations of energies often given to us via triangles, which will help advance ourselves, our groups, and humanity. Now, he says, with these I shall gradually deal, and I shall also, in the final part of this section, give you an exegesis of the tabulation. Well, basically what he's going to do is interpret for us Aries, Leo, Capricorn, Gemini, Virgo, Pisces, Cancer, Libra, Capricorn, that kind of thing. He's going to look at the ray triangles, and he's going to talk about the most prominent a member of the triangle at this time, any triangle. Remember, triangles are triangles in rotation. And so depending upon the stage in which through which you are passing, one of the members of the triangle will be a leading member. Now, the generic way to focus on this is 3-2-1. It's not invariably that way. Sometimes the number two develops as fast as number three, and number one is held back for a long time, but in certain types it develops faster. So basically 3-2-1 is like throat, heart, head, or third ray, second ray, first ray. That's the generic manner of development. And if you look, say, at the first ray triangle of Aries, Leo, and Capricorn, the rays connected with them are Aries ray 1, Leo ray 2, and Capricorn ray 3, even though they are all of them distributors of the first ray. So there are many ways to consider these triangles, and when they show up in your own astrological chart, you may wonder what to emphasize and, you know, how to go about that. Generally, it's a safe bet to emphasize the rising sign rather than the point that gives you the influx of monadic energy, if you're ready to receive it, or that sun of probability, which is the sun sign, and which everybody can access. It's best for students of our type to emphasize the rising sign. So he's going to deal with this, and we'll go along and study with him, and we'll try to memorize these energies. For instance, all of us, the memory is very important for all of us, and we should be able to go down the list of ray triangles and say, these are the three signs of the zodiac through which a particular ray is manifesting. And we should be able to do that to pin these very important triangles in our memory and just see whether they affect us or others or humanity at a certain point. Going on a bit, I know this is, okay, complicated stuff if you have not spent a lot of time studying esoteric astrology, but at the same time, it is necessary to get a larger point of view. So no matter how tedious it may be, a certain amount of memorization is required if we're going to be able to relate these different factors and these different levels in a meaningful way. We don't always want to be struggling, looking at the book or the index or the CD-ROM to try to figure out what's happening. We want to carry it, as they say, learn it by heart. Certain of the forces with which we are dealing govern humanity in a peculiar manner. Now, we're not going to know the complete depth of what he says, but some hint is given. And the effect of their influence is to bring about the at-one-ing of the three planetary centers. So he's saying certain constellational forces showing up as signs of the zodiac surrounding the Earth. If you ever want to have a good time with esoteric astrology, go back to the 1917 book, I think it is, written by Alan Leo, called Esoteric Astrology. And you'll find certain things there written at least 20 years or maybe a little less before DK wrote Esoteric Astrology. And Alan Leo anticipates some of what DK has said. And he writes about the higher aspects of our energy system. Of course, having read DK, you may be in a position to say, well, of Leo's book, this fits and this doesn't fit. But one of the things that really impressed me was his description of what signs of the zodiac are. and they are not galaxies of stars, but concentrated influences. This is what DK tells us. I think it's page 611 in the astrology book by DK, something like that. And they are shaped like the sections of an orange around the Earth. Now, where he got that and how he got that, I don't know. But something begins with the vernal point of the vernal equinox, and there are 12 equal sections which are not constellations. They are the concentrated influences of the constellations, transformed in such a way that humanity can use them. Maybe the great beings on our planet can actually use the star energies direct. So anyway, four signs of the zodiac here bring about our objective, which is the at-one-ing of the three planetary centers, Shambhala, Hierarchy, and Humanity. When you run into the word at-one-ing, you know it's a Ray 4 word. It's making one out of the many, and especially out of the pairs of opposites, bringing them together, oppositions and crosses and things of that nature. And this fourth ray, of course, is very important in everything connected with humanity. Our monads work on the fourth plane, the Buddhic plane, even though they originate from the second plane. And so that fourth plane is called the Buddhic plane, or plane of pure reason, and it's also the ray of the plane of harmonization and the plane of at-one-ing. Now, when there are frictions and difficulties between people and between man and the environment and all that, the at-one-ing energy of Buddhi will help bring it all into harmony. So these, eventually, Shambhala, Hierarchy, and Humanity have to be brought into harmony and mutual support, and the process is not yet done regarding that triangle. It takes a long time to bring those together, and eventually DK has something he calls the future, and you see the three brought together. There are four constellations, as you know, do we know, which convey the required energies which will make humanity divine. Now, what a statement that is, because, you know, in a way, all the energies, when rightly used at the right time, contribute to making humanity divine, but he has particularly isolated these. And they are Aries and Leo, two fire signs, Scorpio, a water sign, and Aquarius, an air sign. And, you know, if you're going to, is there anything to unite these? And if you look closely, you're going to see one factor which definitely unites these four, and that is Uranus, the hierarchical ruler of Aries, the veiled hierarchical ruler of Leo, the exalted planet in Scorpio, and the principal ruler of Aquarius, not only in its orthodox sense, but the principal ruler of the veiling moon, which is the hierarchical ruler. And of course, we don't have Libra there, but, you know, Libra is one of the Uranian signs. Well, Uranus is a sign very much associated with the Sea of Fire. It is the home of electric fire, and hence it has something really to do with the logoic plane, the topmost plane, on the cosmic physical plane, and the divinity of man in its most essential cosmic physical plane sense is that logoic plane. Now, the Christ is becoming a seventh degree initiate, and so is the Buddha, and so they are able to focus their attention on the logoic plane in the sea of fire, and to, as it were, sit at the right hand of God and be part of the council chamber at Shambhala. Now, there are probably other reasons why these signs make a man, a human being, divine. And I think it's such a study that it would be best to take it up next time. And DK will give us, well, basically he's going to come down to this amazing picture involving two major triangles, but you can probably get out of it other triangles as well. And maybe that's what we'll deal with the next time. I want to be careful about, you know, doing too much, because in this science of triangles, as learned by esoteric astrology, there is just such intricate detail. Now, you know, Master DK is a master astrologer, which to me means that he has not only a strong representation of the third ray, which gives you the acute energy of divine mental perception, but he has this second ray, which gives you the deeper, esoteric, intimately felt meaning of the astrological factors and their relationship to the rays. Well, DK is not going to enter into this and study everything independently, because he says he's already done that in the first 400 or so pages. I would, he says, however, like to point out that each of these constellations is closely connected as a transmitter of energy with certain stars lying outside our zodiac altogether, thus connecting our tiny planet with certain great focal points of energy. So Aries is connected with the pointer, which is most distant from Polaris, Leo with the pointer star in the Big Dipper, closest to Polaris. You see here, this is the Aries star, Merak, and this is the Leo star, Dubi, depends on how you're pronouncing it. So these are the pointers, and they point towards that star of direction, Polaris. Scorpio is associated with Sirius, and you might not think so. There's a very important triangle, which is basically Sirius, Scorpio, and Mars, and it's very important for people who are fighting their way into hierarchy. And Aquarius is connected with the central star of the Pleiades, Alcyone. And, you know, that's interesting. Krishnamurti had Aquarius as the rising sign, and his sun was in Taurus. And when Leadbeater and Annie Besant wrote about his lives, his incarnations, even though DK said it's too much from the personal angle. Okay. They called it the Lives of Alcyone, or the Lives of Alcyone, depending on how you want to pronounce that. So he was known by the central star in the jewel box, in the Pleiades, associated with Aquarius, called Alcyone. So we have pointer two, pointer one, Sirius, and Alcyone. And triangles can be made of them in relation to Earth, and they have a big, big conditioning effect. Now, sometimes we think, well, the triangles, it's a very practical approach, and it is. And we have our friends with whom we share light and goodwill, and one day even the will to good. But in this vast triangles network, there are many super beings involved, and they too are organized triangularly. Now, when we get into the etheric body of the stars, we're going to deal with interlocking circles, and not too much is said about that, but it's understandable because of the wholeness-producing factor. But meanwhile, our sun, that does have an etheric body of interlocking circles, is related to other stars in a triangular manner. You might say our sun, you know, is related to Alpha and Beta Centauri, the closest of the stars to our sun. And you might say that our sun is related to Sirius in the big dog and to Procyon in the little dog. And there, you know, there's no way to have a group without everybody being related to everybody else. Usually in some sort of triangular mode. So it's a very, very big science. And, you know, we can scratch our head and we can wonder, well, you know, how can I ever absorb these large structures and what they do for our planet and for our solar system? And the answer is, with applied study and meditation, you and I will absorb their meaning. Not all, because it's too vast, but the ones that are most relevant to the development of the Earth, we will absorb. So, having spoken probably enough or too much, I don't cover a lot of ground here, but I try to go as deep as possible, as deeply as possible, and we'll get into these. Because here we have the next thing is going to be about the sign and the particular star, which is not part of our solar system, to which that sign or constellation is related. So we're basically ending the reading and commentary of number 67, and I imagine we're still on page 481, not moving.
We moved to 482.
Oh my goodness, that's progress. Isn't that funny? I intuited somehow that your voice would come and say 482. Okay. All right, it's always good to have someone keeping things straight. And then number 68 next, and 482, and what is it, the 24th we'll be meeting, and it'll be morning, at least morning here in Europe. Actually, the evening time is a pretty good time to meet because, well, I don't know, it might knock out Australia a bit. I guess we'll just have to be happy with the fact that we might, at a convenient hour, catch one out of two. So I wish it could be otherwise, but unfortunately, the Earth is round and extensive. So this will be the morning presentation at 5 a.m. GMT. Okay, friends, so if you've been able to follow a little bit of that, you might have some questions. You know, this is cosmic occultism, but it's not without relevance to what we can do practically, because it is the source of the energies that we use practically. And the science, of course, has to consider these sources. Even though we, you know, cannot, I mean, you know, it's much more for the planetary logos, for the solar logos, to deal on intimate terms with these vast sources. But we can at least be aware of where the energy we use comes from. We all feel the energy of the signs. If Aries comes about, we feel it. If Leo arrives, we feel it. Or Scorpio, we feel it. And Aquarius, too. And the moon changing position, even though it is considered to be a thought form effect, it brings that energy to us and we feel it. We feel the change. And that's the level on which we can operate, the level of the signs. Now, when it comes to the constellations as galaxies of stars, we just rely upon the concentrating of their influences around the Earth in a manner that we can utilize according to our human level. And meanwhile, you know, Master DK knows all these things, but it doesn't stop him from being very practical about advising us regarding what to do with these energies. Eventually, these energies will build your causal body. Use them correctly, they will build your causal body. Use the planetary energies correctly, they will build your causal body and help to unfold the petals of the egoic lotus, which will allow you eventually to enter into a still higher state of transmission and reception in the spiritual triad. So in the little ebook that I did in a video form on the egoic lotus, a lot of this is dealt with. How every sign of the zodiac and every planet can contribute to every phase of evolution in which you may find yourself. So although it would take a long time to listen to it all and study it all, it can be helpful because every one of us is busy working on a particular petal and rounding out something that came before and anticipating something that goes forward. And we want to know how to appropriate the energies we need to help unfold the petals and where those energies may be located in our horoscope, what we can expect in terms of progress because we have access to certain particular energies in a particular incarnation. Okay, well, that was a little deviation, but you'd be surprised how the science of triangles really fits into the whole question of the egoic lotus. You know, three knowledge, three love, three sacrifice, three synthesis.
And Michael.
And how, and who, you, Michael?
Is that... Michael, yes. There are some written questions. Judy wrote a question about 25 minutes ago, so I'm going to unmute her so she can explain what the question is.
Maybe I can see it somewhere. Is that possible?
Well, she says, so 111213. So, Judy, can you explain that? You're unmuted.
Let's see, I'm looking for Judy here.
J-O.
Oh, that's it. Yes, of course, of course. I knew I had that. What is the STRA? No, this is something different. Judy, if you wish to say something about that, you're most welcome.
Oh, she says no audio.
Uh-oh. Okay, anyway, it's just a question of a primary ray and subrays. Like, for instance, what I said, how I said that, the context was this, that three signs or constellations are transmitters of the first ray. Aries represents the first subray of the first ray. It's the major first ray sign. Leo, which is the second fire sign and has to do with the heart and with the soul, represents in this configuration the second subsidiary of the first ray. And we don't just go to Sagittarius, we do go to Capricorn because it is a major first ray sign and it has to do with manifestation in the earth. And it represents, in one way, the third subdivision under the first ray. And you can, you know, you can go through the different triangles and you can always do a 1, 2, 3. But the 1, 2, 3 is not just according to the quality of the members of the triangle, but also according to the stage of evolution at which we find ourselves. For instance, if we're not yet at the soul stage and we're very much at the personality stage, then the personality indicator, which is usually associated with the first, with the third ray, will be instead the directing agent, the most powerful, and will have a dominating and somewhat first ray effect. Now, I would say that people like ourselves are in the position where the soul member of the triangle is coming into power. Maybe not entirely yet, but it is becoming the dominating energy because these are triangles in rotation. So a rotation is taking place. Now, later, when we have built the Antikorana and we can use the monadic power, the first ray member of the triangle will come into the dominating position. I mean, just because something represents the monad does not mean it's dominating in the triangle. We have to be able to be at that stage of evolution where it is meaningful for the first ray type, the first ray constituent to be in the highest power. And for instance, well, that's, he says that with non-sacred planets, the monad is occultly ineffective or non-effective. That's pretty much the case with Earth, but you can read the indications and see where the substratum of the Earth is the first ray. So it's a bit intricate, right? But okay, you know, these things will attach themselves to our memory and our understanding. Right. Okay, what else, Michael?
Okay, Regina is asking for the name of the star, of the Palladian star.
Alcyone. In other words, Alcyone is the central star of the jewel box. It is the foremost star of the seven. Now, there's a lot of mysteries connected with all that. You know, they are the so-called wives of the seven rishis of the Great Bear, and one of them is veiled because she married a mortal, which means she has a special relationship with a non-sacred planet called the Earth. But in the center of it all is the number one star of the Pleiades, Alcyone, Alcyone, and sometimes pronounced Alcyone. And it has a tremendous lore connected with it. And, you know, what DK said is, for disciples, please pay attention in your horoscope to the position of some of these major stars. Alcyone would be one, Sirius would be another, the pointers would be two more. So there's some pretty prominent stars, the four royal stars, known as, it's slipping my mind. It's the star in Taurus, sort of the orange star. Anyway, Regulus is related to Leo, and Fomalo is related to sort of Pisces, and these are royal stars. And let's see if I have memory for anything else.
Aldebaran.
Thank you, Biel. That's it. Aldebaran, right. The Eye of the Bull. Yeah, okay, so we have Aldebaran, Regulus, Fomalo, and what's the other one? Do you know? Somehow it's just slipping my mind.
And,
yes, oh, that's a tremendously huge star, very far away. It's called the enemy of Aries, or the enemy of Mars, and it's so big that if you placed its sun congruent with the center of our sun, in other words, you place the center of Antares congruent with the center of our sun, it goes way, way out there, I think, beyond Mars. It's that big. It's really huge. And yeah, there's a lore connected with all of them. So sometimes, depending on what your major signs are, you may want to look at what it means to have those stars in your chart at certain places. He also says, please follow the positioning of Venus, which represents the solar angels, and what is it doing in your chart. Do you know, BL, what position Aldebaran is found in right now? I'm just trying to...
No, but I'll go look.
Okay. I'm just curious. It's a supergiant star, and it's very, very bright, but nothing is as bright in our local system as the stars of Orion, and they would be important. Where is Betelgeuse in your system, you know, or every one of them relates to a different ray, and the ones in the belt of Orion form a triangle. Altak, Alnilam, and Mintaka, and they are so super bright, you just can't believe how powerful they are compared to our little diminutive sun and even Sirius. Some 33 times brighter than our sun is just dim compared to these others. Okay, so. Let's see, is there anything else there, Michael?
No other specific questions.
Okay, no others having questions. Let's see, I think.
Oh, Kim Knight said she put in a question.
Okay, good, 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 good. All right, we'll take a look at that in just a moment. I'm
Kim Knight asked for the.
Wait. I'm just trying to. I usually. Ah, there it is. So, if I can just find that. Well, I found Aldebaran, and it's got a triple plus on it. So it's considered to be very favorable, but I don't know how to reach it. So maybe BL can get that.
Yeah, Michael. Yeah. Aldebaran right now is at 10 Gemini 0354.
Okay. That's what I was. See, I'm looking, for instance, we all have to look at conjunctions and things like that. So I knew there was something about light. I have an example of my own horoscope where Venus in Taurus is conjunct Aldebaran at this time. So, you know, one would look there for something connected with the solar angel and light in general. And I would say that you can look at your horoscope for conjunctions mostly conjunctions, maybe oppositions, but mostly conjunctions of a planet and a star. And something may come to you as a result. So I would, there's a lot to investigate here. Now here's Kim. Okay, yes, I put a question, here goes. And what is her question? Or is it to be said out loud, Michael?
Kim Knight asked about the location of the book on the egoic lotus, and BL put a response in with that link to Makara. She put that in for everyone.
Right. Thank you, Bill.
And Chris asks, NASA says that more stars are born from the Belt Triangle of Orion than any other they've seen.
Is that from the nebula, which is providing the birth of stars? So that's very interesting. It's the place of Orion in our local system. Has something to do with the path of the planetary logoi, the third cosmic path that it's possible to take. But obviously, we're not yet at the place where we can metaphysically interpret this particular type of astronomical fact. Orion is considered by some to be a heart center in the one about whom naught may be said, with the Sirian constellation related to the Little Bear, more the Ajna center. But the heart center is considered by many to be Orion. And Betelgeuse, as a heart within the heart. And it's a big red giant, and it has a huge second ray connected with it. So DK is not, you know, giving us the esoteric meaning of quasars and, you know, things that are going on way, way out there, nor the esoteric meaning of normal astronomical facts. But it is interesting to think about this birthing of many stars. Maybe we can come up with an interpretation, but there's so many things closer to home that we have to deal with as a preamble to that. Okay. Okay, so BL gave you this, and by the way, It's a long study. I think I know one person who's gotten through the whole thing. I think there are 160 programs. I may be wrong, BL, you probably know, but it's something like that. It's a lot of programs.
I thought it was 71, but okay.
Oh, hey, you know, that would be a relief, wouldn't it? Or maybe I'm thinking of hours, because some of those programs were 5 hours long in the early days and so forth. But maybe you could, you know, look that up for me, because I don't want to misquote it. I know I counted a lot, but it may have been the hours or something. Anyway, it's on Makara. That's the point. And I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe it's on you.
I think you may be right about the hours, but it's 71 is the last one.
Okay. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, that's still enough to deal with. it'll take a year, you know, at least to work through it. Okay. So Kim got her answer, and good. Anything else before we just have a little closing? Now, you know, you may say to yourself, esoteric astrology, there are different levels at which I could learn this. He spends the whole first part of the book talking about the signs of the zodiac. Then he gets into some of the deeper stuff, like the signs of triangles and the signs of the crosses, or whatever he calls them, you know. Cardinal, fixed, immutable crosses. There's quite a bit there as well. And then he starts taking up the rulership of different cities and countries, and that's all part of the triangle work. So there's a lot to learn from DK always, and I just want to make a general statement. There comes a time in the studies of the arcane school when they basically say to you, look, I hope you're studying at least 1 hour a day. And it may not seem like much, but if one is consistent with that 1 hour a day of study, it can mount up and be very valuable. So I just hope that you are studying at least that much. And then, because the only way to get a little bit of a handle around what DK has presented is to be very consistent in your studies. Of course, some of the studies can be through the ear and the eye with these videos. That's also possible. According to your best method, I would say, just do it your best way. Hitchhikers. Oh, goodness. Is that about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? I didn't read it, but it was a popular book once.
And it's been made into a movie, too.
Oh, has it? Oh, okay. Was it a long ago? What, did that happen? Or
It's been a minute or two, yeah.
Okay.
But all before right, we good. Go into the meditation, want to do a brief review of the calendar, or do that after the meditation?
Yeah. No. Let's take a look.
Okay.
You want to be them?
Yes, I've put the calendar together. We've got and I put links in for these. The identify as being. Tomorrow, Thursday at 5 p.m. GMT.
Can I make you a presenter?
As you wish.
So we can see your...
see the calendar?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, close that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got Return of the Christ meditation broadcast tomorrow at 5 a.m. GMT. Identify as being at 5 p.m. GMT. On Friday, we have the Dissipation of Glamour webinar at 5 a.m. GMT, and a treatise on cosmic fire in depth at 5 p.m. GMT. The IAB and cosmic fire are Zoom meetings. The doggy webinar is on GoToWebinar. We have the solstice broadcast meditation at 5 p.m. GMT on Saturday, which means that the Soul of Nations regular ask meditation and the resources for hierarchical purposes meditation broadcast on Sunday are canceled.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Okay. And we start, what time do we start? Did you say five?
The solstice meditation broadcast begins at 8 p.m. GMT. The actual time is 9:43:33 p.m. GMT.
Okay. That's good.
That's on Saturday. Okay. It's very late night for you and Tuya.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay. And then we have the Esoteric United Nations meeting for those who have dedicated themselves to the program at 1 p.m. GMT. And then Francis Donald has his Secret Doctrine webinar at 7 p.m. GMT on Sunday.
Right. And don't we have something from Eva and BL somewhere along here?
That was last Saturday.
Oh.
Yeah.
Next one is 11 July.
Okay. 11 July. Okay. Very good. Okay. Well, thank you, communications team. And thank you, Michael, for making all of this so clear. It's a big help. And we'll just, do the best you can, everybody. Basically, there's lots to attend, and I realize nobody can attend everything. But, just be aware of what is available to you. And pretty much just make sure that you're on the constant contact list, which gets everything and all the alerts concerning what's available. Now, are there any final statements before we have just a little alignment, basically? Because
Chris asks, why is Antares the enemy of Aries Mars?
It's just the word ant, and antagonistic. It's kind of they have similar qualities, but the power of Antares is so great that it overwhelms the usual non-sacred impulsiveness of Mars. It is a huge influence in the question of triumph. Antares is, if we can respond to it. It also has some liabilities, and sometimes all the royal stars have liabilities. Aldebaran and Regulus and Formulo and Antares and Formulo, they all have problems if used in the wrong way. But this is just how it has been in the lore, that it's considered to be the enemy of Mars. I suppose it's so extremely purposeful, and Mars carries the liability of non-sacred impulse. And Antares, of course, is a being far, far beyond it. But if I'm correct, then the diameter, or the radius, let's say the radius of Antares, extends to the area of Mars. Both are red, and the word Ares, A-R-E-S, was the word for Mars in, was it Roman, I suppose, the Latin language. So they are definitely related, but let's just say there's a regulatory kind of influence coming from Antares, which is not yet there in the rebellious planet Mars. It has a long way to go. So it's my opinion that there's such a strong regulation of purpose in Antares that it overcomes the usual Martian tendency. Now, different people might explain that in a different way. As a matter of fact, you know, maybe what we could do, maybe to be a little more, let's see, meaning of, oops, sorry. Of Antares. So, meaning of Antares, and maybe there's something different. There it is. And somewhere, some of you will remember that a picture of the extent of these giant stars, given a congruent nucleus with the sun, is given to us. It just makes our sun look like a dwarf. From the Greek, Antares initially meant meaning to say opposing Aries. And Ares does mean Mars. And then there's the story, and here's how it got its name. So, you know, take a look at this. It looks like Wikipedia. We don't have time to do it now, but maybe you'll come up with something, you know, even deeper than I was able to offer. Interesting, it's a variable binary star, etc. Well, we have to learn something about these great stars. Now I'm intrigued, but I have to let it go. I have to let it go, because otherwise it'll take forever.
And perhaps the last question from Ishtar.
Yeah.
Is there a focus on Arcturus in esoteric wisdom?
Yes, yes. It's sometimes people call it, first of all, if you follow the handle of the Big Dipper in its natural curve, you will come to Arcturus. And I think is it a member of the constellation Bootes that is associated with the Christ? And some people have called it the star of the mother of the world. But it is a very significant star, and would be one of those that should be looked up in the chart if you feel so inclined. Its position, I think it may be the Bear Driver, which would be Bootes, and Bootes is sort of the middle constellation of Virgo, isn't it? What's the name of the Centaur being the third constellation, and the Bernice's hare, that story of sacrifice, the first constellation. Somehow it has a connection with the Christ, this Arcturus star. But again, you know, research is required here, and that'd be a good thing, Ishtar, to apply yourself to. Might be interesting. Okay, is that it then? The god of war, yeah, Ares, and sometimes Ares, Ares, which is maybe more Roman, is it, Anne Veronica? Anyway, Mars and Ares, per se, are opposing this great star. They're not opposing it in space, but maybe the meaning is stronger. I would doubt that the constellation Aries is the enemy. It's more Mars, I believe. Yeah, Arcturus is in Libra. Thank you. Okay. Well, let's just have a little alignment, and that will be. But, you know, basically what we've been getting into is to say, look, there are all kinds of triangles in the human energy system and in our chain and on our planetary scheme and in the solar system and in our local cosmos system between stars. There are even triangles between constellations. So we've begun to look at some stellar triangles. But of course, we would have to know the meaning of the constituents before we can really do that. See, when you look at the triangle, well, I don't want to go on and on, but when you look at the triangle of our sun, Helios, with Sirius and with Procyon, you see the initiator of our sun as Sirius and the initiate. An initiator, and you see Procyon as racing ahead eagerly like the aspirant. So there is a particular relationship there which has to do with the one most accomplished, and maybe our sun as the least accomplished in that particular triangle. But it has to do with aspiration and initiation. Yes, because, you know, both Scorpio and Aries are ruled by Mars in one place or another. So Mars is one of the rulers of Scorpio. It's considered both the orthodox and the esoteric ruler. It is only the orthodox ruler of Aries. And here, Anne Veronica, I just read that Antares is a word combined with anti and Aries. Yeah, and that's what I said originally. Well, there are balances, standoffs, antagonisms, cooperation, harmonization between these various sources. Eventually, it will all harmonize. Okay, friends, now we go on. And just think of ourselves as a group. And let's imagine that we are on top of the mountain together, from which a great sight of the starry heavens can be had, the so-called passage of the energies. It's an initiatory position involving Capricorn one fine day. And as you look at the starry heavens, you realize that we can see certain planets that have a relationship within that planetary group we call the solar system. For instance, Saturn, Mars, and Earth. You can see both Mars and Saturn, and you're standing on the Earth. It has a special meaning connected with the third ray. And you can see a host of different stars. Some of them are prominent, and you can identify them. You can see, not when you're looking at the heavens, but you can imagine the sun, because at night it's not coming out except the midnight sun, and then that would block out the stars. But you can look at Sirius and you can look at Procyon, and think of our son as well. And that is a significant stellar triangle, and there are many more. And then you might need some equipment to do it, but you can use one of those cell phone imagers, and you can see Aries and Leo maybe simultaneously, and then Capricorn, you'd have to use the cell phone to see, and that's a constellation. All three of them are constellations, and they form a great triangle, a constellational triangle. And you can look at, in the same part of the sky, the Great Bear and the jewel box of the Pleiades. And maybe, I'm not sure, can you see Sirius at the same time, but using the cell phone, you can get the image. And relationship exists between all of these. Significant relationship that affects our sun and its solar system, affects the planets in our solar system, affects the Earth, and eventually the monad and soul of the individual. That's probably as far as we can go, because without real telescopes, we cannot see all the members of our local cosmos system simultaneously and related to other cosmos systems and so forth. It's too much. But at least with constellations, we can see their relationship. And it's all organized on the basis of the science of triangles. And we're in this matrix of triangles. Now, the practical thing is to deal with triangles the way DK has advised, and build up love, light, goodwill within humanity through our work with those with whom we are sharing the triangle process. But the vision on top of the mountain, which is usually granted to the third degree initiate by himself, but can also be granted to a group at a certain point, shows us as well the organizing principle of triangles on many different levels. Planetary, stellar, and constellational being the three levels that we are capable of dealing with at this point. And so we are in the web of space and trying to enhance the relationships that we can actually participate in, and to acknowledge the relationships that are way too big for us, but at least we know something of what they're doing. There are times when you can see Mars, Venus, and of course the Earth simultaneously, and maybe times that you can see Mercury, Venus, and the Earth simultaneously. And we use what we know when we see those luminous sources to realize what they are sending and sharing, sending to the Earth. And so we simply resolve to do our best to promote the science of triangles and the development of the triangles work on the levels where we can, and to appreciate, at least academically, relationships that we cannot affect, but we know of their importance. And we will close with the sound of the Om. Thank you, and see some of you tomorrow morning. We'll be dealing with the important meditation in a broadcast, The Reappearance of the Christ. It's the usual YouTube link, and then identify as being a webinar at on Zoom in evening GMT, 5 p.m. Thank you for participating, and it will all sink in if we give it time and systematic study. So, lots of love, many blessings. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.